Earlier this week, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force released new guidelines on depression screening. They recommend all adults should be screened for depression as a routine part of health care. The new guideline separately addresses pregnant women and new mothers to say they in particular would benefit from that kind of screening.
Now that so many people are being screened, there will probably be more people diagnosed with depression. So we're talking to an expert about treatment options for depression now. Dr. Steve Garlow joins us. He's a professor of psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Garlow, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
So we mentioned these new guidelines. Can you tell us a little bit more about what they are? What are they?
The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is it's a part of the health quality organization in the government, and they have done a very large study, a very thoughtful assessment of all potential guidelines around depression, and they have very strongly recommended that everybody in the setting of their delivery of health care get screened for the presence of depression and then also referred for appropriate treatment. And I think this is a major move forward in terms of recognizing depression as a chronic illness, very similar to the approach taken to things like hypertension, diabetes, and other kind of chronic illnesses like that.
Do you have a sense about why this panel made this move to step up screenings for depression?
Well, this is their third iteration of reviewing the literature, developing guidelines, and data has been accumulating over the last 10 years, the last 6 years. The last time they did this was 2009, on the utility of screening instruments, on then once the patient's identified on the benefits of treatment in terms of their medical and their mental health outcomes.
I want to take a look at how we define depression.
Sure.
To make sure we're all on the same page. What is the medical definition?
Yeah, a major depressive episode, a major depressive disorder, is a condition, it's a psychiatric illness, it's a pathological mood state. It impacts a number of different domains, the person's mood, their emotional state, their activity level, their sleep patterns, their energy levels, their interest in food, their appetitive behaviors, as well as chronic thoughts of death and risk for suicide. So it's not just having a bad day. It's not just being upset about something. It is a chronic and persisting pathological mood state. To make a diagnosis of depression, a person has to have these symptoms for 2 weeks or more, and they have to be significant in that they impact and impair the person's activities of daily living, cause them to seek treatment for it.
Right, and as you said, I mean, these can be shifting changes in a person. How do we know that we're catching someone when they are experiencing it? What would the guidelines have to do to accomplish that?
Well, so what the guidelines are recommending is that everybody, that when people are at their health care, at their doctor's office, they get a screening instrument. The one that's very commonly used for adults is something called the PHQ-9, the Patient Healthcare Questionnaire 9, and it asks the 9 cardinal symptoms of depression, and then it's been rated so that if a person scores a 15, they have an 85% likelihood of having a moderately severe depressive episode. The recommendations, though, don't rely on just the screening instrument. So once the person's been identified via the screening instrument, they should be referred to somebody, to a knowledgeable professional who can then do a further clinical assessment of their condition to further establish whether they have a diagnosis of depression or not.
We're talking right now to Dr. Steve Garlow from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about treatment options for people with depression in light of new depression screening guidelines from a federal task force that were released earlier this week. And Dr. Garlow, the screening guidelines, they also focus a lot of attention on pregnant women. Yeah. And also new mothers. Why those groups of people?
Well, depression during pregnancy and depression during the postpartum period can be a very significant problem for both the mother and the child and the family unit. Mothers who are depressed are less focused on, less able to engage their child in the very essential early moments of life when the formative mother-child bond is being made. This could impact the child's developmental trajectory. Women who are depressed while they're pregnant can oftentimes not take as good care of themselves, not have as good nutrition, not have as good prenatal behaviors and activities, be as diligent in the sort of things that lead to better pregnancy outcomes, and it's been kind of a chronically under-recognized and under-focused group of patients.
And we know that postpartum depression, that's gotten a fair bit of attention over the last decade or so, but less so for depression that might be developing while a mother is still pregnant.
Right.
Why do we need to focus attention there?
Well, women who are pregnant and who have depression, they have lower birth weight babies. They're being depressed puts a tremendous stress burden on the mother, which in turn puts a stress burden on the developing child. It's not an insignificant thing for a woman to be depressed in terms of the stress on her and then the stress that's transmitted to the child. And as a result of that, then that's going to impact the potential birth outcome. And so identifying that woman and making the right interventions can have a positive outcome on the pregnancy, and then after the pregnancy on the development of the family unit, the mother-child relationship.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how depression screening works, how big a deal it might be for physicians to start adding this to the routine?
Well, so one of the things that the U.S., the Preventative Task Force, they emphasize over and over and over again in the document they released is it's screening in the setting of adequate resources to follow through with that patient. So just using some kind of a screening tool like the PHQ-9, the Edinburgh Postpartum Depression Screening Tools, what they recommend for postpartum women, it's not enough to just screen and identify those people. There has to be people within the care system that can then pick up on that patient, further assess their clinical state, whether they do in fact have a depressive disorder, whether they do in fact need treatment, what treatment they're going to need. So it's not enough to just hand the person a piece of paper with 9 questions on it and get a score and say, okay, well, you're depressed. It's having the full system of care that comes with with initially identifying the patient. And this is even more so, I think, with the pregnant women and the postpartum women. These are women in a vulnerable state. It's not just them, it's them and the child who are the focus of treatment. So having knowledgeable providers who can act on more, the screening is just that's the first step, that identifies the person, and it's then having the whole system of care. The model is now for diabetes and blood pressure, this sort of comprehensive model identifying the person and then having multiple layers of treatment providers managing the patient long term. That's the same model that's being proposed for depression, and I think it's a major step forward in terms of public health, public mental health in this country.
Do you think those systems are in place right now? I mean, look at here in Wisconsin, we have shortages of mental health care in lots of pockets of rural Wisconsin. So if you've got so many more people being screened, how do you make sure? That seems like the harder step, making sure the systems are there, that the care is there.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, that's the reading through the guidelines, they say over and over again with an adequate resource system. They make this point, it's not enough just to identify the person with the screening tool. It's to have the mechanisms, to have the comprehensive care, the cooperative model of care, to have all those providers in place. These are issues of workforce development. These are issues of access. These are issues of who's going to pay. I mean, it's a big question that you ask, and the answer for which is larger than just saying, well, we need to screen everybody.
We're talking with Dr. Steve Garlow right now from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're talking about treatment options for people with depression in light of new depression screening guidelines from a federal task force released earlier this week. And coming up, we'll talk more about what that treatment could look like.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has depression touched your life, your family? Have you or someone close to you suffered from depression? What questions do you have about what's out there in the world of depression treatment? What do you think of this idea of screening for everyone? Do we have the resources out there? And if you work in the healthcare professions, what do you think of this idea? As a doctor, as a nurse, would you want to do these screenings for your patients? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion now about treatment options for depression with Dr. Steve Garlow from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about treatment for depression? Have you or someone close to you experienced depression? And were you able, if so, to find the help, the treatment you needed? Is there access to these services out there? And what do you think of this idea of screening patients, whether you're a patient or a healthcare provider yourself? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And let's talk a little bit about treatment now. What kinds of options might be in place, and who could administer them? Would it be the primary care physician, or would it be somebody else?
Yeah, certainly there are multiple options for treating depression. It is a treatable disorder, as treatable as other chronic illnesses, and treating it improves outcomes both in terms of the person's mental status, but as well as their medical condition as well. So treating depression in a person who's got chronic medical illnesses makes it so the patient's better able to manage those chronic medical illnesses. So treating depression, it helps the person not just feel emotionally better, but helps manage their medical conditions as well. So there are real positive reasons to do this. The options are antidepressants, of which there's a large number now that are safe and efficacious. There is no question that antidepressants work. So that would be under the supervision of a physician or a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant who is trained and knowledgeable in depression and in use of antidepressants. It could be with a psychiatrist. And there are a number of psychotherapies that are also very well known to be efficacious in treating depression. A therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, it's referred to by CBT as the acronym, has been shown repeatedly to be beneficial and efficacious in treating depression. That's the treatment that's actually recommended in the treatment guidelines, in the new guidelines for pregnant women, because it's a non-pharmacological intervention. Having good CBT requires having good, well-trained CBT therapists available to those patients. Having people who are knowledgeable in use of antidepressants requires having well-trained, knowledgeable individuals who are available to see those patients. But treatment is available, and treatment does help, and it does work.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Sigourney on the line from Green Bay. Hi, Sigourney.
Hi there.
What was your story?
Well, I've had depression since I was very young. I was diagnosed around the age of 16, and personally, I wish that there were more systems in place for me to have been diagnosed earlier. I feel like I would have been very much helped throughout my childhood if we'd kind of known what the issue was. And been able to see some of the red flags that were put up. But, yeah, I find that, you know, multiple areas of care are very much needed in treating my depression, such as counseling and then medicine. And I get it from different branches. And so it's important to have that approach of multiple areas of resource to be able to treat it properly.
And do you think that this new screening tool, upping the screening, do you think that would have helped you earlier on?
I definitely think it would have helped. Like I said, I wish that I had those kind of tools growing up, that I might have been able to take hold of it earlier and, you know, maybe quit some of the struggles that I had going through high school with depression.
And Dr. Barlow, is this kind of the dream that we do get to these people earlier and get them the help that they need a lot earlier than they might have gotten otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question that the longer a person has depression untreated, the worse their condition can become, the worse their life is, the worse their medical conditions can become, the more difficult to treat the depressive disorder becomes. So identifying people at the earliest point when they do clearly have identifiable, diagnosable depression, and then treating it effectively is clearly the best approach and could really help people downstream before the disease becomes more chronic and has greater impact on people's lives and functionality and ability to go to work or complete school, participate in their families. So that's one of the real, important aspects of this is identifying the people early and getting them appropriate treatment early as well.
We're talking to the UW-Madison's Dr. Steve Garlow, talking about new depression screening guidelines and the treatment that might be available there. And we'll go next to Brooke. Brooke joins us in Madison. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure. What did you want to add?
I just love this discussion. And coming from somebody who was diagnosed with depression in middle school, I love the idea of dealing with different therapies when you're young, because I think that manifests into a much bigger problem as an adult. Like you said, holding a job, finishing college, it's very hard to retrain yourself, you know, in your 20s, how to deal with something that you've been struggling with for years, especially with, you know, health insurance, and you might not have that offered through your employer. And I really don't like to rely on medication. The screenings are important early on. It gets much harder as an adult to hold a full-time job and finish school and all of that stuff.
Brooke, thank you so much. Appreciate that call. And another caller there, Dr. Garland, talking about catching this early,
yep,
treating it early, and
yep,
not letting it sort of boomerang throughout the rest of a
yep
person's life early on.
Yep.
And we haven't really, the guidelines don't make specific reference to adolescents,
right,
to children, but I assume that will be a big focus here too.
Yeah, there's a separate task force that's focusing on that. These guidelines are 18 and above, and they specifically focus on adult, pregnant and postpartum, and then older adults, and there'll be a separate set of recommendations around approaches to depression in children and adolescents. That's a nuanced discussion. There are sort of more factors involved, and so the current guidelines do not address adolescent and childhood onset. But I'd like to respond to one of the things that this last caller said. In a systematic way, now that if these guidelines become sort of the practice and the norm, she mentioned insurance, and this is, I think, we cannot bring this type of approach forward without also having it connected to the payer resources that are going to support the treatment, and so moving mental illness, moving treatment for depression onto equal footing as in terms of a third-party payer, in terms of an insurance structure, as other chronic diseases are, as is diabetes, as is hypertension. I think to bring these screening guidelines and recommendations forward, which are really quite well thought out, it has to come with an equal commitment in terms of an ability of the resources to support it.
Dr. Garlow, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And that was Dr. Steve Garlow, professor of psychiatry at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us to talk about new guidelines for depression screening.